Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. We'll officially get started. Good morning, buenos dias. Welcome to Mobile Metron, Metron in the Park, whatever you want to call it. We are, I don't know, 2 months into the pandemic, I don't even know how long it's been since we met in the theater, but there still is a Metron, and thank you, those of you that know that, and we're still planning on doing meditation weekend number 10, first weekend in August. That's the plan. I don't have any inclination that we're going to cancel that for any reason. We should be at least able to go to Jekyll Island by that time. If you're interested in that information, let me know and I'll put you on the messenger thread. No obligation. It doesn't mean you have to go. It just means that hey Kashana. It just means that you want the information about it. This will be our 10th meditation weekend, be our third time going back to Jekyll, and they've all been just amazing, and I'm sure this one will be too. We'll be on Driftwood Beach. Can everybody hear me out here? Am I talking loud enough? I'm trying to talk loud enough for everybody in person to hear me without, hey Linda, hey Ed, without just screaming into the telephone. First of all, I just speak a blessing on everybody for being here today. Thank you for coming out. No pressure. Those of you that don't feel comfortable about coming out yet, that's totally up to you. I feel like it's perfectly safe here in the park. Everybody here is socially distanced, much more than any social distancing I've seen going on anywhere around me. Like, we went up to the roof last night to take some pictures, and the club room up there was packed with people. None of whom were wearing masks. So I thought, well, there you have it. So do what is right for you. Just remember that every decision you make, hey, Chris and Raleigh, every decision you make, everything you do does affect other people. So it's not wearing a mask or adhering to protocols doesn't mean you're fearful. It just means you're respectful. You're respectful. It's like putting a hand over your mouth when you cough. It doesn't mean you're afraid. It just means that you're a nice person. So, hey, Leslie. I'm going to be somewhat brief again today, and then I'll turn the live off, and we'll do a meditation. Actually, maybe I could figure out how to include everybody here in the meditation if I can play the music. Let me figure out how to do that. Thanks for the good reports. Great thing about social media is I can stay in contact with you during the week. It has been, once again, quite a week, and of course I'm going to address that, and thank you for having an ear to hear, and just being open-minded and having an open heart. My desire, as always, is to be a bridge builder and operate the ministry of reconciliation. That being said, I do want to share a scripture with you, and that I think doesn't get a lot of attention. It's in Matthew chapter 10, verse 34. Jesus says this really strange thing, you know, because we think so much about him being the Prince of Peace and, you know, being sweet Jesus. But on this particular occasion, he says, don't think that I came to bring peace to the earth. He said, I didn't come to bring peace. I came to bring a sword. And he said, I came to set houses against one another. That he talks about, I don't remember specifically because I'm not looking at it, but it's something like to set fathers against sons and mothers against daughters, and people of their own household will become enemies. And it's an interesting concept because you think about Jesus, you know, being so loving, and the Jesus we know is the one who is, if I'm lifted up, I'll draw all people to me. And yet there was also this other side to him that says sometimes truth does bring destruction, and some things have to be torn down before they're rebuilt. Last night, before I say this, you know, there was one occasion where Jesus goes into the temple and he doesn't like what he sees there, and he just kind of goes nuts. I mean, he not only starts turning over the tables of the money changers, he actually goes outside and fashions a weapon. He gets a cat of like a whip, cat of nine tails, a whip, and he starts running around chasing people out of the temple and destroying property. It was so it was such a shocking thing that afterwards, you know, Mary and Joseph had other children after the birth of Jesus. So Jesus had at least half brothers, half sisters. If you were raised Roman Catholic, you were taught the opposite of that. But the Bible says, you know, that he did have half siblings. James and John were half siblings of his. But it was such a shocking thing that his family got together and had an intervention afterwards, when they were basically saying, you know, the teaching stuff was fine, but I just don't think it's appropriate for him to be destroying property. Cue the sirens. Good. Very good special effects. And they said, you know, he's really gone over the edge. I mean, his message is messing with his sanity now. And they actually discussed putting him away, like having him committed. And I was thinking about this, and if you read more into what I'm saying than I'm actually saying, that's on you. Your interpretation says more about you than it says what I'm saying, than it does about what I'm saying. But last night, of course, I'm watching the news, and there's a situation where a young man, probably about 10 minutes away from where I live, is in a Wendy's drive-thru. He's asleep at the wheel, apparently inebriated, or at least, if not inebriated, there were intoxicants in his system. For good or for bad, cops were called on him, and the situation escalated, and when they came to get him, a fight broke out, and he took the taser of the cop, and next thing you know, as he's running, he's shot and killed, 27-year-old man. And next thing I saw, you know, is protesters converging on the Wendy's, and somebody sets fire to it, and there's, you know, they're showing aerial shots, helicopter shots, and I'm looking at this, and the interstate's shut down, traffic can't get through. And so I'm looking at it, and I think, you know, I've been pretty vocal about just not getting distracted from what is really going on. Like when the protesting was going on a few days ago, when the conversation comes all about the looting, you miss the point. And there has to come a point where you're at least as upset about people being murdered as you are about windows being broken. At least that. If you're not there yet, that property is still more important to you than human life, you still have some work to do. And but I'm watching this. Of course, I love my city, and I'm thinking, man, they really need to get this under control, because they're right next to a gas station. If that fire spreads, this is a powder keg, and you got hundreds of people standing around. If there's a big explosion, this thing's gonna go from bad to worse really quickly. And I started to post something about I did post a scripture out of Hebrews 12. It's the Message, where in King James it says everything that can be shaken will be shaken. In the Message it says it a little more clearly, to the point I was trying to get across. And and I started, hey, you guys, come in. Glad to see you. Welcome. I started to post, let's at least be in agreement that some firefighters can get through the traffic and put that fire out before this thing gets out of hand. And I posted it, and then the vibration on it was wrong. I thought, no, if I post this, in the next few minutes, this conversation is going to be all about people destroying public property, and this isn't going to be what this conversation should be about. So I just took it off, and this morning when I got up, the place is burned down, and now it sort of becomes a visual for the frustration and the rage that people feel. And all I can say to you is, of course I don't want to see buildings burned down, but if your first impulse is, what's that going to do to burn down a building? Again, you're still really missing the point. And I can't make you see the point. You might not ever see the point. There's a reason why the scripture says, let him who is ignorant be ignorant still. There's only so much you can argue with somebody, and at a certain point you just have to say, well, I guess we're just going to have to agree to disagree, because you're going to see this through your paradigm no matter what I say. And that's why, and the irony of this is not lost on me when I'm talking about this constantly and saying we need to listen more and talk less, because, that's ironic since I'm the one talking. But what I'm saying is at least hear somebody out and try to understand how they're looking at this, because they're not seeing this the way that you are. And I do want to say, the last few days I've used my platform of my daily meditation to talk about some things that can trigger a lot of people. And I have to say, I really appreciate that people have just been, even people that I personally know, because I see your post on other pages, I'm quite sure you disagree with what I'm saying, but you allow me to say it. So at least that, I think, well, at least there's some progress, because at least people can have the respect to say, look, that's your page, and if that's what you want to say there, I'm not going to argue with you about it. So I'm going to, I may be grasping at straws there to see that as a positive, but I'm going to see that as a positive. And, I love talking about visualization and, all of that kind of stuff. Even yesterday, my cousin texted me, and she said, I just want to give you a warning, because she's real into everything, how cosmic stuff affects us, whatever. And she said, last time a particular planet was in retrograde, you got vertigo, and I just want to tell you that the summer solstice is on the way. Just be aware. And sure enough, in the middle of the night, I woke up. I thought, oh my God, I don't know if this is power suggestion, but I'm feeling dizzy. And so, I love all that kind of stuff. And I'll get back to talking about that. It's just that right now, for me personally, it seems irrelevant. I just feel like I have a place where I could say some things that maybe could help people hear something they haven't heard before. And so, I'm just going to keep talking about some things. And thank you for respecting my gift enough. Hey, Cher, respecting my gift enough to just allow me that. And as those of you that have heard my voice for many years know, I've never required that everybody agrees with me on everything. That's never been a mandate with me. I can say, well, here's the way I see it. You rightly divide it. If there's something I say that resonates with you, keep it. If it doesn't resonate with you, it doesn't have to be a deal breaker with us. We can, we can remain in fellowship. And I think that's really important. And I see that still being practiced today. I'm saying all that because I'm about to say some things that could trigger a lot of things in you. So everybody take a deep breath, because there's maybe a little surgery going to take place this morning. But I was thinking about this term yesterday. I've heard this in the news a lot lately, the term gaslighting. Somebody's gaslighting you. And I know where it came from. It's from there's a play that was written in 1938. Most of us today know it from one of its film incarnations, the 1944 movie Gaslight with Charles Boyer and Ingrid Bergman. And it's a classic, and it was nominated for a bunch of Oscars and won two, and Ingrid Bergman won best actress for it. And what gaslighting is, it's a story about it takes place in the time before electricity when gas was pumped into everybody's house, and when you walk into a house, you would turn on the gas lights. And Ingrid Bergman, her character Paula, falls in love with this man and doesn't realize he's the man that murdered her aunt, and that he's only married her to get back to the house because he knows there's some priceless jewels hidden there. Is what he murdered the aunt for, who was an opera singer. By the way, there's spoiler alerts all over this, so if you're waiting to hear this, see this movie for yourself, watch this later, because I'm about to spoil it. What Charles Boyer does is he little by little tries to make her think that she's going crazy. Like, he'll ask for something. Where's that thing that I gave you? And she says, right here. And then she can't find it. So he starts, and it'll show up somewhere, and he starts making her think that she's a kleptomaniac. And he does this thing where she doesn't know, but there's a way for him to get out of the house. And he goes through a back alley and he enters through a skylight, and he adjusts the gas lights so that when she thinks she'll ask somebody, did it just get darker in here? Nobody knows what she's talking about. So little by little, she starts thinking, I'm losing my mind. And finally, at the end, Joseph Cotton's character, who had been an investigator on the case years ago, recognizes her. And he's the one that, he's the one that exposes her, and they finally arrest Charles Boyer. But the reason gaslight, and I hear it used incorrectly, the reason it's moved into our vernacular is sometimes somebody can say something to you and you think, I can't put my finger on what it is that you said, but somewhere in there is an insult. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it's not the words you said as much as it is the vibration I'm picking up from you. I've been dealing with this for years, in situations where somebody would say something to me. Michael, I'm not using this chair if you want to use mine. Okay. Somebody would say something to me and I'd think, I felt like that was kind of a loaded statement. And somebody with me would say, I think you're just being too sensitive. You're just being too sensitive. And then later I would find out something from their history. I think, oh, it was exactly what I thought. It wasn't the words itself. It was the way they said it. Ladies, I don't want to just throw men under the bus, but I think women will understand this more than men will, especially straight couples. Ladies, you know how infuriating it is when you have an issue that your husband doesn't get, and you get really upset about it, and instead of him apologizing for what he did, he says something like, well, I'm sorry you got so upset about this. And you know how it just makes you want to smack him because you think that's not an apology. It sounds like an apology, but somehow you put this back on me. The implication is I'm just overreacting. I'm being, hysterical or whatever. And it's one of those things that it's like gaslighting. It's like somebody saying something and it's not the words so much as it is how they said it. And if that right there set off an argument in your marriage, you might want to see a counselor, because there's definitely some communication problems. That's why if you ever go to couples counseling, they will take you through an exercise where the person will say, the other party will say something to you, and you have to respond by saying, this is what I hear you saying, and you say it back to them. Because sometimes somebody says something and it's not what they understood what you're saying, but they didn't really say it. And, that's why the scripture has to be rightly divided. That's why the letter kills, but the spirit gives life, because it's not just the words. It's like, have you ever misunderstood somebody's text? Somebody texts you and you're kind of insulted by what they said, and you go back and read it and you think, wait a minute, what exactly? Like for instance, I have thanked somebody before via text, and they'll say something like, what they mean to be saying is, no, comma, thank you. In other words, I should be thanking you for this. But without the punctuation, it looks like they're saying, no, thank you. And, you know, when you look at it, you think, are you disagreeing with what I'm saying? And so sometimes you have to go back and, you know, if you don't know the context and hear the inflection in the voice, sometimes you're not exactly sure if you were insulted or not or whatever. And we're living in a day and age now where sometimes people gaslight other people and they might not even realize that they do it. That's why I mention if you're on one side of the argument about looting and burning and rioting, you may be totally pure in heart. You know, to the pure in heart, all things are pure. You may think, look, I don't have a racist bone in my body. I just hate to see property get damaged. And you may be totally telling the truth about it. You have to understand that somebody on the other side of that, who is much more, that's code for a person of color, who is much more connected to the problem on the other side, what they're hearing you say is, I don't really care. It doesn't matter to me that, they hear you say, Black lives don't matter. That's what they hear. When a white person says, all lives matter. I was reading, somebody said this today, put it in a meme yesterday, and they said, if you're upset with the phrase Black Lives Matter and you want to say all lives matter, then you're going to have to be okay with saying Happy Holidays and not Merry Christmas. Because basically, Happy Holidays is saying, I acknowledge all of the holidays, nothing against Christmas. I'm not anti-Christmas. I just recognize that December also has Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and New Year's Eve and maybe even Ramadan. I'm not sure, but there's a lot of holidays. So if you hear that as me saying, I hate Jesus and I want to kill Christmas, you might be hearing more than what the person is actually saying. So we're having to learn how to communicate better. So now that I've laid that groundwork, let me say something. There's a gentleman who watches me. I've never met him. You know, he'll know who he is when I say this. But a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was last Sunday, he said something about. He said, I love what you're saying, but I wish you would stop obsessing over worrying about what people think about it. Like, it's like you're doing too much. Please don't be offended at this. And I thought, well, I didn't realize I was obsessing about it, but it did make me think, okay, fair enough. You know, that may be a good point. I remember John Scott years ago said, if you preface a statement with saying, now, this is controversial, but what you've done is you've sent a verbal code to people. They're about to hear controversy. Whereas if you just say, this is what I'm seeing in this, and let me say it this way. Real recognizes real, and people who really want truth are able to, by the help of the Spirit, look beyond politics and racial bias and whatever and say, let me try to hear what you're saying. And before we just burn the bridge with each other, before we never speak to each other again, because there's a whole lot of that going on. We live in a cancel society. And believe me, I've used that block button on Facebook more than once, just because I think I don't have time to tangle with you, no matter what a person I've never met who completely misunderstands what I'm saying and didn't understand this post. Anyway, I need to tell y'all something. I'm a white man. I am. I know some of you are like, nah, the jury's still out on that. I mean, you're white-ish. Okay. Generally, I biologically identify as Caucasian. And your point is well taken. You know, I have had African Americans for years say to me, you seem more black than you seem white. And I'm like, you're not the first person to say that to me. And that's not an insult to me. Here's a second thing I need to tell you. I'm Southern. I was born about 10 minutes from here. And grew up here. We moved back to Atlanta when I was 12, but Atlanta was always the hub. Even when my dad pastored churches around Georgia and in Tennessee, we were back to Atlanta at least once a week. I mean, and Ken will not take any offense of me saying this, but Atlanta is the great love of my life. I mean, I love it. I mean, I just love this city. I've been all over the world. I will never live anywhere else but here. I love this place. So I've told you three things about myself. I'm white, I'm Southern, I love Atlanta. I don't know if you ever heard this, but Atlanta was burned during the Civil War. I know, I'm just a harbinger of information this morning. I know you're like, oh my God, this is so revelatory. He is boom, 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 boom. Just one thing after another that I didn't know. I have to say this because there are people in other countries watching me right now. I would also like to say I love being Southern. I think grits should be eaten with breakfast, not potatoes. Grits. I think if you don't like collard greens, something's wrong with you. I think y'all is a very reasonable contraction. How else are you going to know if I'm speaking to just one of you or all y'all? I will always be Southern. Because of growing up in Atlanta, I've lived very close to memories of the Confederacy. And I remember when my oldest son, Jared, was, I guess he was 4 or 5, maybe. I took him, it might have even been before Christina was born, because it was just him with me. And he was always a super smart little boy. So we're walking around Stone Mountain, and he looks up at the carving on the side of the mountain. The carving on the mountain was done, it wasn't completed by him, but it was designed and started by Gutzon Borglum, who carved Mount Rushmore. And it is the largest relief carving in the world. It's an incredible work of art. There's pictures of, it's my granddaughter riding up on your bike. Hey, baby, come on up. There's pictures of it when it was first, when one of the horse's heads on the, I think it's the horse of Robert E. Lee. It's so big that there's pictures in the 20s of a table set up in there, and people had a banquet in the horse's mouth. So that gives you some perspective on how ginormous it is. And I remember Jared looked up. Come over here by Ken. Jared looked up. He said, Daddy, who are those men? So I said, well, they were three generals. It's Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, and forgot who the third one is. But who is it? Somebody. Maybe John B. Gordon. I don't know. I just got a little distracted. Sorry, I've watched too many Broadway shows. This is way too obscure a reference, but the show Little Abner, I don't know if you ever saw that. They have a song in there, Jubilation T. Cornpone. It's about, he was like the most horrible Confederate general, and Dogpatch honored him. It's a very funny song and kind of sad now because pretty much all of our military bases are named after, I think all of them are named after Confederate generals, many of whom were not really good. They were kind of, not all of them, but many of them were like Jubilation T. Cornpone. I know that's going to be lost on some of y'all. But anyway, so he said to me, so glad you're here. So he said to me, what war were they generals in? And so I'm trying to explain to him the Civil War. I kind of gave him a crash course in it. And he said, well, well, which side were we? And I said, well, we're Southern. We were the South. And he said, well, did we win or lose? I said, well, we lost. And he went, oh, man, I hate that we lost. And I said, well, buddy, we should have lost because what we were fighting for was not a just cause. So here I'm trying to explain to a little white four-year-old boy, you know, I'm trying to explain slavery and racism and secession from the Union and why we're the United States. I mean, it's, you're having to break it down. I don't know if you've ever tried to explain racism to children, but it's challenging. I remember even Sophia just got here. It's been 3 or 4 years ago, but she had, in her class, had just learned about Rosa Parks and several things about the civil rights movement. And I remember, I don't think she'll mind me saying this, but I picked her up after school and she got in the car and she started crying. And I said, what's wrong, baby? She said, why don't white people like black people? And why wasn't that lady allowed to sit on? And I'm trying to explain, without making my granddaughter cynical, I want to say, well, you know, this is a reality in the world and we're, you know, little by little trying to make things better. And, you know, when you try to explain something to a child, you realize how absurd it sounds because it just doesn't, there's no making sense of it. And I've tried to make sense of it this week. I mean, this week, you know, when I'm doing an entire meditation about rape and some of the horrible stuff that was in the Genesis story of Ham and his father, you know, I'm trying to figure out what the heck is going on in this world. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go back this week and listen to some of my meditations, because I've talked about things this week I've never taught on before, but desperate times call for desperate measures. Anyway, so over the years, I would be outspoken about Georgia's honoring of the Confederacy. A lot of people don't know this, but most of the Confederate monuments that we have in the South, of which there are hundreds, most of them were erected around 1905, 1906, in a response to some of the race riots, like in Tulsa, that were going on. It was kind of the reason why, in Rome, why they crucified people in the public square. Like, remember, if you ever saw Spartacus, remember how you'd see there was like crosses lined all the way down the roadside? And it was a visual to say to people, watch yourself or you're going to end up like this. That's why lynching was a powerful visual. It was much more visual powerfully than throwing a black man in a river, because hanging him from a tree was a photo op. It was like, let me show you. It was to keep people quelled and fearful. Like, if you see that man swinging from that tree, next time you think about breaking the law, you're going to recall that visual image. So visual images are powerful, and they're not always negative. I mean, photo op isn't always a negative connotation. I do things for photo ops all the time, you know, intentionally. There's nothing wrong with that. But they can be used. Well, I started to say they can be used for propaganda. Really, everything's propaganda. I mean, everybody's trying to get their point across at all times. I mean, that really is the truth. Thanks for coming. that's the deepest truth I'm going to give you today. Drive safely. But it's true. And if that triggered you, then I'm especially talking to you. Anyway, the same thing with the Confederate flag as being a part of Georgia's flag. It was not our flag since the Civil War. It was changed back in the 50s as a response to Brown versus the Board of Education. And there were uprisings where people of color were making progress, and white people basically said, we need a visual image to make people, we're getting our picture taken again. So everybody wave. We're all social distancing. Oh, okay. Go report us. Whatever. Whatever, dude. I mean, I think everybody here is 6 feet apart, right? At least. Okay. Anybody feel Like you're in danger? Okay. Anybody here held against your will? All right. So I have to say my powers of concentration have gotten better. I'm things like that used to distract me a lot more than they do now. Now I just kind of keep going. Maybe it's my vision's not as good as it used to be. So it kind of works for me. Like, I guess I didn't see that. Used to, I'd see people's mean looks on their faces. Now I can't really see you that well. So I just think everybody loves me. Also, you can't always tell people's, their reaction. I've told you this before, but when we were still in the grocery store, there was a young man that no matter what I would say, he would never, I mean, he gave me no facial response whatsoever. Even if I was really saying funny stuff, he just would never laugh. Never. I mean, everybody on either side of him would be cracking up and he'd be like. And one day I was greeting people at the door of the sanctuary. And he walked up to me. I noticed he had two hearing aids in. I thought, well, maybe he doesn't really hear me. But he came up to me and he said, this is just the way he said it. He said, I just want you to know you are the funniest person I've ever heard in my life. I listen to you all the time. I listen to your tapes over and again. They are hysterical. You are hysterically funny. When I listen to you, I laugh and I laugh and I laugh. You are the funniest person I've ever heard. He just walked off and I thought, well, I think I've learned something here. Not everybody responds the way I think they should. I'm always great in an audience. You know, when I go to an audience, I'm always like, you know, agreeing big and laughing big and, you know, helping out the comedians. And they always end up playing to me because I know what it's like to be on this side. Anyway, back to the Confederacy. You know, I've been outspoken about this for years. And I remember when we had Judah in a private school when he was in middle school age. And I said something about the Confederate flag, and he went back and quoted me in his classroom and nearly got beat up after school. I mean, it definitely affected him. Kids wouldn't speak to him after that. Now, the teacher called me and said, I just want to thank you for, because your son shared with us what you shared. And I thought that was very enlightened. Now, also, there was one day I was talking about the Confederate flag, and I came out, and my car had been keyed up and down on both sides. So I actually used to get more pushback from talking about the Confederate flag than I did talking about hell or me coming out. So it was people, it's like hell is like right here, and the Confederacy is like right here. It's like Confederacy, most dear. Hell, second dear. You know, it's like of things that people want to fight about. Love hell, love the Confederacy. You connect those dots however you want to. But I don't want to, you know, I try to be aware, because believe me, I've heard this my whole life. My entire life I've heard it's heritage, not hate. Or it's history, not hate. I've heard white people from the South say, we need to honor the Confederacy. See, this is bringing up some old stuff. I'm looking around like, who's hearing me? anyway, just make sure somebody's got my back when I'm talking about this. To which I want to say, all right, if you're that much of a history buff, I mean, you know, we're 244 years old, and the Confederacy was four years out of that 244 years. If you're that much of a history buff, then let's talk about why Georgia was named after King George. Let's talk about Oglethorpe. Let's talk about the Cherokees. Let's talk about all of these other things that have to do with two centuries of Georgia history, because you seem to know a lot about these 4 years. I mean, 4 years ago was 2016. That's how long the Confederacy lasted, from then till now. And the fact that it's still so honored and venerated. And people say, well, we're just honoring the military. No, let me explain something to you. I'm going to tell you something else. I'm white. I'm Southern. I love Atlanta. It's called the United States of America. I don't know if you got the memo, but after the states were divided, a war was fought, and then the states were united. Okay? If you'll find an American flag and on that field of blue, count the stars, you will see there are 50 of them. There are not some of them in one section and others of them in another section. The United States. E pluribus unum. It's Latin for out of many, one. So if you say, I love the Confederacy because I'm a history buff, that's a lie. I guarantee you, if I challenge you about history, you're not going to know anything other than some country star singing the South's going to do it again. I remember being in a Waffle House one day, and who did that? Was that, that wasn't Hank Williams Jr., was it? I don't know who sang the South's going to do it again. And everybody in the Waffle House was singing along with it. And there was a lot of fist pumping and people singing the South's going to do it again. I want to say, excuse me, I love the South too, but exactly what are we going to do again? I mean, are you planning on seceding from the Union? I mean, did I not get the memo? I mean, are we planning on pulling out again? Because I don't know how many slaves you guys own, but I don't own any slaves, so I don't really feel like fighting about this. I mean, if this is, what are we going to do? And I understand, you know, I understand the whole competition thing. I'm not even that much of a sports fan, but I know what it's like to be excited when your side wins. Like, when I was in the marching band, this was my favorite part of football games. When at the end, when we knew we were gonna win, while we were so far ahead, which for Decatur High School was rare. We did great in basketball, not so much in football. But at the end of a football game, if you knew the clock was counting down and you knew there's no way this other team's gonna win, everybody would start singing, na 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 na, na 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 na, hey hey, good. But I used to really love that, and I also used to love. We would sing, like if we were playing Avondale, it was like, Avondale, we love you. Avondale, we love you. We love you in the spring and in the fall. Avondale, we love you. Avondale, we love you, but you just can't play no ball. And it was just great, and it was like friendly camaraderie of taunting the other team. And you know, it gets, I know what happens between Georgia Tech and UGA every year. It's a big deal, and I understand that Southern football is a big issue, and like in, not so much here, but like in Europe, with what we call soccer, what they call football. I mean, people, stadiums get burned down, and people get killed over sports conflict. So I understand that whole thing, to want your side to win. But at some point, you have to understand, you can compartmentalize. I can love the South. I can also say the South was involved, the Southern states that seceded from the Union were involved with something that now we would call treason. And we're honoring something that frankly was dishonorable. And I'm not dishonoring the South. I'm saying you have to put that in context. You could say, well, it wasn't really about the Civil War. Well, then what was it about? Why did they secede then, if it was something that could just be fixed, you know, over a conference table? And I'll tell you this, I love Stone Mountain, and Stone Mountain's has a dilemma right now, because as far as taking down the Confederate monuments, I think that's easy to be done. You know, I know some of them been vandalized, but most of them, you know, need to be put in a museum, not to lose the context. I think, you know, somewhere in Alabama, there's a slavery museum. So I think there should be a museum that holds that place of history. But when you put something on a flag or in a town square, you're venerating it in a way that says, I'm not just looking at this historically, I'm looking at this affectionately. I'm looking at this as, I'm venerating it. And, with Stone Mountain, they have a logistical problem. I don't know how they would ever get rid of that carving. I mean, it's the entire side of the mountain. And if you've ever been to the laser show, they've been very proactive about it, because for years in the laser show, they do a thing where the lasers, they outline the three generals that are there. You know, initially it was supposed to have been hundreds of generals on the side of the mountain with horses. Once they got started, they realized we may have bitten off more than we could chew. We better just go with three generals from the waist up. But if you ever walk down close to on the lawn there, you'll see there's 13 terraces that honor the 13 states that seceded. And the original plan, there was supposed to have been a temple. I mean, you can Google it. There was a temple where people went in and like worshiped these Confederate icons, like they were as if they were gods. So when people have an issue about it, it's a valid point. What's that got to do with Jesus saying, "Don't think I came to bring peace, I came to bring a sword"? Because we're in a time where people are going to have to deal with some uncomfortable things, and you're going to have to get outside of your comfort zone. I love the movie Gone with the Wind. It's on my top 10 favorite movies. I also know that Margaret Mitchell, who lived not far from where I lived, who was killed not far from where I live, is buried not far from where I live. The premiere of Gone with the Wind was not far from where I live. I mean, I'm like right in the middle of the hub of her life. And Margaret Mitchell was like a Roosevelt liberal. She was very good friends with the president of Morehouse. She gave a lot of money to Morehouse. She put students through college there. Her point in writing the book, you have to understand, this was written in the 30s. You have to understand her context. Her point of writing it, the title says, "This way of life is gone with the wind. This way of life has disappeared." So she was basically saying, this is what we were. This is not how we are now. She was not trying to glorify slavery, but when Selznick turned it into a movie and it does look like it's glorifying slavery. I don't think it's being banned. I think HBO took it out of its lineup or whatever. I think people are way overreacting because you love to see Scarlett have her hissy fits. I understand it's ingrained into white people's, and I love it too. I have a Atlanta Christmas tree that's all iconic Atlanta things on it. One of them is a figurine of Scarlett O'Hara because it's a part of our history. I'm not saying the movie should be burned. I'm saying we're going to have to look at some things differently. And if people see things differently than you, before you just come out swinging, it's heritage, not hate. Yeah, a lot of it's hate. I'm telling you. A lot of it's, most of it's pretty much hate. And it's pretty much, let's put these symbols up to keep, because you never know what those black people are going to do. Next thing you know, they might be burning down a Wendy's. And in this day and age, I looked at, again, I didn't want that fire to get out of control last night, but I was watching the helicopters get an aerial view of it, and I thought, yeah, take a shot of that, because it's showing how enraged people are. Now, I'm not, if I have to tell you I'm not anti-cop, then you're too immature to even be listening to this. So I'm not going to, there's nothing I've ever said that's anti-cop. I will say there is a word that I keep hearing, and I think it's a valid word, and it's the word de-escalate. It means cops, I don't think all white cops are racist. I think there are policing, policies of ways that people have been taught this is how you deal with a situation that I think needs to be enacted across the board. I think there are too many things in our world that could have gone differently. I see things in my own life that could have gone differently if I had had better skills about de-escalating. I guarantee you, of all the years I pastored a church, I had thousands of people come and go. I wouldn't even know how many thousands came and went. And some of it I couldn't have helped. Some of it I could have. There are so many situations where somebody got upset about something and I just thought, well, I guess you're gone. I could have made that better. Now, in retrospect, I look at it and say, yeah, I should have handled that differently. So I want to say there's got to be a way that a situation next time a man, white or black, but particularly a black man, if he's asleep in a drive-through line, which I can tell you, I've been in some drive-throughs lately, especially during the pandemic. I could see how you could fall asleep in them, because I've been trapped in a few of them lately that I couldn't get out of. And I thought, well, I guess we're just here. We're just going to be here. And I've sat in some of them for 20 or 30 minutes. I can see how, I don't know if he was drunk driving or not, but I could see how you could fall asleep. And if the next thing you know is cops waking you up and your instinct is, oh, white cops waking me up, this could go badly. Yeah, you might put up a fight. You might run. You might grab a taser. You say, I don't know what I would do. You've never been in that situation. You do not know what you would do. Now I think, can't there be some training where you can, first of all, wake somebody up and say, hey, Betty, are you okay? Can we get an Uber to drive you home? Does it have to end with him being murdered? His little girl's birthday was yesterday. I mean, she had to go through her birthday with her father being gunned down and murdered. Well, he was running away. Well, then shoot him in the freaking leg, for crying out loud. Shoot him in the foot. Do you have to just murder him? I would go so far as to say, my God, in this day and age, with as much as happened just this week, let it go. For God's sake, let the man run, pull his car over and park it, impound his car if you need to, write him a ticket. Did you have to shoot him 3 times in the back with things already being like they are? So, yeah, today, if somebody's saying, well, he was drunk, what the heck? Is that the world we live in now? If you're drunk, you should be murdered? I mean, really? That's the world you want to live in? And so, you know, little by little, you know, doing away with chokeholds or whatever. Yeah, it's incremental change. The Titanic doesn't turn on a dime. You've got to, that thing turns very slowly. And you have to understand, this ship's been turning a long time. And when people say, really, it's 2020 and we're just now into saying black men shouldn't be murdered. You say, well, it wasn't because he was black. Well, I don't know any cases of any white man being gunned down because he was asleep in a, I mean, do y'all know of one? I don't know of one. And, you know, now it's like I said this week, it's become a big issue this week of people wanting to talk about George Floyd's criminal past. Okay. I'm not saying he didn't go to jail a few times. What? So that means he should be murdered in broad daylight with people kneeling on his neck after he was already unconscious? Really? That's the America you want to live in? And if his criminal past is that disorienting to you, then think about Tariq Rice, 12 years old. Sophia just turned 13. This kid was her age. He was 12 years old in his own yard playing with a cap pistol. He gets shot and killed. I mean, this isn't just criminals. This is like, you know, what's her name? Breonna Taylor asleep in her bed. So that, little by little, that can be changed to do away with the, what is it? The no, warrants. What is it? Yeah, no knock warrants. So change is incremental. Understand that our country is in an upheaval right now, and it needs to be. You have to understand, when people have not been in your shoes, they do not see what you see. They just don't. I feel like a pretty good sense of empathy, and I grew up in a very diverse world. And I don't just mean with black and white. I mean, the type of ministry I grew up in, I was in touch with all kinds of people. So I just know, I can kind of see everybody's point on everything, sort of. And that's an advantage. I'm glad that I have that. But I also know that people could say some really crazy stuff. Like, I remember, this was a few years ago, I was at a pastor's conference, and I was just there because somebody had invited me there. And another pastor came up to me and he said, I just want you to know, I know who you are, and I've seen your story. I just want to ask you, why does there need to be a gay pride? He said, we don't have straight pride. Why do gay people have to get? And this is back years before marriage equality was granted. I said, are you serious? I said, well, every day's straight pride, every day of the year. I mean, straight people can just, you could meet, a straight person can meet somebody this afternoon and go marry them today. They've got a reality show where people meet on the show and get married. That wouldn't have been possible for gay people just a very few years ago and could be endangered again. I'm going to tell y'all something right now, and this may be too much for you. I don't consider myself a radical. I don't consider myself an activist. I just consider myself a truth teller. They start messing with my marriage, y'all better be prepared. So Bishop's going to be going to the White House. I'll be out there. I've never marched in a gay pride parade, but as God is my witness, you're not gonna say my marriage isn't real just because you don't see it from your vantage point. I'm not trying to equate being gay with being black. I'm saying there are different situations that other, it's like when every year I hear somebody say, why does there need to be a Black History Month? We don't have White History Month. Yeah, you have white history everything. That's why there has to be a Black History Month, because you've only heard history told from a Eurocentric viewpoint. And so little by little, we're going to have to let go of our idols. Idolatry is alive and well. I can tell you this, and I promise this is the truth. I have voted Republican and Democrat. I have probably voted Republican more than I have voted Democrat in my history. I have always tried to do the right thing. Let me tell you how upright I am. This was a few years ago in George W. Bush's second term, because I voted for him. I did. Because at that time I thought, well, that's what you're supposed to do. You know, he's standing up for morality. So, okay. And at that time, I always knew I was gay. I never thought I'd come out. But on his second term, he ran very strongly on trying to make it a constitutional amendment that marriage should be between one man and one woman. And I remember being in the voting booth looking at that, and it says, do you vote for him? And it was a moral dilemma for me, because I thought, well, what's the right thing? And I went ahead and voted against gay marriage. That's how much I was trying to do the right thing. At that time, I thought, well, it'll never be applicable to me. I'm never going to come out. You know, Jesus is going to come back soon, isn't he? I mean, I've been, my whole life, I've been saying, I'm not going to come out because Jesus is coming back soon, isn't he? I'm going to go to heaven and Jesus will fix me. Won't he? You know, and at a certain point, I begin to think, my life's moving very fast. I don't know how many years of authenticity I have left. I don't think he's coming. I think I'm going to just tell the truth about myself for the third act of my life. And no regrets about that. But I can promise you this. I have never idolized a president, ever. Even the ones that I voted for, I never idolized them. If you're idolizing anybody who's in office, you really need to rethink that. If you want to stand up, if you want to believe they're standing up for your policies, that's fine. But if you have somebody that you defend no matter what, no matter what they say, you really need to think about where your allegiance is. Because I voted, I don't think it would shock you to know who I voted for in the last election, but I'm not a devotee of his. I don't defend everything he did. Some things he did, I think, well, I don't really understand that or whatever, but I see the way some people defend somebody who's in office, and I think, wow, you're really starting to scare me. Because if you want to stand up for a certain ideology, that's fine. But if you get to the place that you can defend somebody at all costs, there's nothing they can do, nothing that they can say that's ever going to make you see anything negative about them, you are an idolater. I just don't know any other way to say it. So I'm ambivalent about how I say this. Well, ambivalent's not the word. No, I'm not ambivalent. I'm cautious in how I say this because I don't want to galvanize people even more. I don't want to make people even more tribal than they are. I'm saying we're in a time right now where things are going to have to get worse before they get better. And you're just going to have to look at a Wendy's burning down and not make it about destruction of public property. That's not the argument. And until you start understanding what the argument actually is, more of that is going to take place. I mean, I live right in the middle of it. We talked about it today. Ken said, do you think, is there going to be protesting tonight? If so, is it going to make it hard for us? Because we're taking mom to dinner tonight. Is it going to hard for us to get back? I mean, it's a logistical situation with us. I said, I don't know. This may be the new normal. I don't know. But I'm not going to run away from it. I'm going to lean into it and say, I believe in this country. I believe in the kingdom of God. I believe in the Declaration of Independence. I believe in the Constitution. I shared this earlier this week. I'm sorry, I was reading somebody's comment just then. What did I just say? Oh, yes. I talked about a line that's in the preamble of the Constitution. It's the second sentence that says, "We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union." And then it goes on to say, this thing can always get better, and it needs to get better. Has change happened? Yeah, a lot has changed. A lot more needs to be changed. A lot has been done. A lot more needs to be done. A lot has been said. A lot more needs to be said. And if you just love the Confederacy so much that you want to fight about it, you really need to think about that. And I'm saying that as a Southern man. I'm saying that as a man who loves, I mean, Pam went out to Stone Mountain this morning. I love it. I'm there all the time. And I don't know how Stone Mountain's going. I know this, the carving has not kept African Americans out of Stone Mountain, because when I'm there, the majority of everybody there walking and running are black. So apparently people have figured out a way to get around it. I don't know how they're going to speak to that. I don't have all the answers. I'm saying you don't have to have all the answers. You have to let what is happening run its course. And I would even go so far as to say, on a personal level, to minister to you, if there has been chaos in your life in the last few months, has there been? Anybody had any chaos? I have. If there has been, sometimes you have to let it happen. You have to let the sword fall. You have to let the tables in the temple be turned over. Everything that can be shaken will be shaken. That's why, and this is, I'm surprised I could even make this statement. I don't know that I could have made it a year ago. If you had said to me, months ago, if you had said, "Are you racist?" I would be like, "Hell no, I'm not racist. My whole ministry, I've stood up to racism. I've never said the N-word. I love black people. I have black friends. I have a multicultural church." Now, if you ask me, I would say, "Man, I hope not. I mean, I don't want to be. I hope there aren't any blind spots. And if there are, I'm open to the sword. I'm open to the surgery. I mean, I hope I'm not unwittingly a part of something that I can't see. It's totally possible. I mean, I'm a white male American man. I mean, that's, you know, things are pretty good for us. And it actually makes me feel more humble to say that. Because there's something about saying, "I absolutely am not that," that just seems prideful. Now I think, I hope I'm not, and I'm trying not to be. And if not being racist means shutting up long enough to listen to somebody else and to try to hear somebody else's viewpoint and understand how they're seeing this thing, then yeah, maybe I have some racism to work on. And it's just like, that's such an unusual thing for me to say. I don't even, it's like opening new neuropaths in my brain. Because I've always prided myself in not being like those other ones. But I think, well, you know, it's an interesting thing. I always thought it was really interesting when Jesus at the Last Supper, remember when he says, one of you is going to deny me and one of you is going to betray me. And they all said, is it I? Is it me? Am I the one? And that's always struck me. Like, why would those guys say, is it me? That means it had to have been in the realm of possibility that they had thought of it at some time. Like, I would think if Ken were to say to me, are you ever going to, you know, are you ever going to kill me? Are you ever, I'd think, how could you even ask that? You know, of course I'm not. If Sophia said, are you ever going to say you're not my poppy? I'd be like, how could you even ask that? Of course I'm never going to say that. The fact that you could say, is it me, means, yeah, it could be, you know, it could be. There is none righteous, no, not one. And I don't need to qualify that scripture with the blood of Jesus. I'm just saying all have sinned. Listen, de-escalate if you can. Think about that word, de-escalate. There may be situations in your life right now where you're in a situation that you could make it better just by handling it differently. There's a different way to handle a situation. My prayer is that tonight, if there's a black man who falls asleep, for God's sake, in a drive-through window, that before there's another murder, somebody will say, let's ask that guy if there's a medical condition. Let's ask that guy. I mean, I haven't fully had time to read up on this, but I just read one little comment where somebody said on the video, he actually asks if he can walk to his sister's house who lives around the corner. So if that did happen, if there's an option, then let's have a cop escort you to your sister's house because you have not broken the law. I mean, unless, was there a law passed that it's illegal to fall asleep in a fast food line? I mean, did that just get, because I nearly fell asleep in Popeye's line the other day. It was pretty long. I don't know. Did something happen? No, I don't think he broke the law. So let's find another way before there's just another killing, for God's sake. Oh, and here comes the patrol, I think. So I don't think we're doing anything illegal. Maybe we are. Well, we may be about to be arrested. So tune in same time next week. Or just remember, I said de-escalate. All right, I'm going to end it right there because I may need to. I'm about to run. All right, God bless you. Go in peace. I'm going to post all my links so you can know how to contribute. God bless you, and we'll see you next time. Bye.